Human Services and Rural Health Policy Committee will come to order. Welcome. The first bill we're going to hear is Senate Bill 845. Have a public hearing. Would you explain the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 845 has had one recent hearing on April 8th. It prohibits pharmaceutical manufacturing companies from providing certain gifts in conjunction with the marketing of prescription drugs. It authorizes the imposition of civil penalty up to $10,000 each calendar day during which a willful violation occurs. It establishes a pharmaceutical marketing penalty fund, appropriating civil penalty dollars received to the Department of Justice for the purpose of administration and enforcement, and it declares emergency upon passage. We do have dash four amendments on this bill.
Okay.
So the amendments delete the word research as the type of activity for payment compensation and expense reimbursement not applicable to prohibition under this measure. It modifies the definition of prescriber. It specifies what a pharmaceutical manufacturing company or marketer may offer or provide as gifts, specifically deleting language for such with the exception of providing a meal or meal service of any kind to a prescriber or an employee or staff of a prescriber at the prescriber's place of business during regular business hours if treated by the company or marketer as a business expense. It modifies language that the department may adopt rather than shall adopt rules relative to this issue, and it reduces the amount of civil penalty imposition by Department of Justice from $10,000 to $500 for each calendar day during which a willful violation occurs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Dr. Alan Bates, come up, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Alan Bates. I'm a physician and state senator from Southern Oregon. The bill before you may strike you as a rather strange bill, and when I tell you where it came from, it will sound even stranger to you. But let me tell you what the genesis of it is and what we're trying to get to here, and maybe it'll make sense to you. Just for further record, I want you to know that for 4 years of my life, which I greatly enjoyed, I was a detailed representative of Park Davis and Company, and had a territory in southern Washington and northern Oregon. And so I have a great deal of knowledge about the pharmaceutical sales, both as both as a detailed rep, pharmaceutical rep, and as a practicing physician. So I have a little different look at some of these things that you might not expect. Having said that, I spend a great deal of my time on my practice every day trying to find samples or get people into programs to get coverage for them for very expensive pharmaceuticals. The pharmaceutical industry has done a great job of bringing wonderful drugs to us that are life-saving and extended people's lives. They've been doing it dramatically in the last 30 years. But some of those drugs are at such a high price that it's very difficult for my patients to access them, and some of them can't. It's a common problem across the country. Having said that, you understand that a great deal of the cost of those drugs is in promotion of the drugs and not in research and development or production of the drugs themselves. The pharmaceutical industry has done a good job also of helping educate physicians and other providers about those drugs, and they have a very legitimate way of doing that. Quite often they will sponsor symposiums, and when new drugs come out, they'll often have dinner meetings where physicians go and have long discussions about the pros and cons of the medications. We are not trying to touch that part of the industry at all. That is very legitimate and needs to be continued. However, there was something that got started about 8 or 9 years ago that I believe is a significant factor in driving up the cost of drugs, and I believe is inappropriate to be done. And that is the supplying of gourmet large lunches for staffs in doctors' offices. It is something that's grown and grown and become completely out of control, and that's the bill you're looking at in front of you. And that's why there's a dash four amendments to it, trying to narrow this down to just those lunches. It may seem like a simple thing to you, but it really is not simple. These lunches are expensive. They go on across the country. It's the one part of the pharmaceutical industry that I still have difficulty with, both as a former pharmaceutical representative and as a physician myself. It is difficult for me to see that kind of money being spent in my office every single day of the week, other than Fridays, knowing at the same time I'm going to walk away from that and have to go back and tell a patient they can't afford a drug that they desperately need. I refused personally to take part in those lunches for years. I felt it's an abuse and something needs to end, and based primarily on the cost of those drugs. So where did this bill come from? It wasn't just for me. In fact, I'm going to go home now and get hammered by my staff for suggesting they don't have free lunches anymore. I'll have other physicians angry at me for doing this. So it didn't come from me. I have some long-term friends in the pharmaceutical industry, people I've known for over 20 years, people who come to my house for dinner, people I spend some vacation time with once in a while, it's people I spend evenings with. These are other reps. They came to me with this. They do not want to be identified because they don't want to lose their jobs. They hate doing this. They think it's a waste of time and a waste of money. They want to do a legitimate job of educating physicians. They've got ways of doing that. But as long as one company's doing it, the other company has to do it too. What we want to do is level the playing field here and stop a practice which I think helps drive costs of drugs up, which is inappropriate for detailing of the drugs, and makes it very difficult for those who want to do the job in as effective and inexpensive way as possible. The pharmaceutical industry has done a great job in the last 7 or 8 years of changing how they do things. They've got a code of ethics they use now. I think you've probably heard about this committee. If you haven't, I'm sure you soon will. And we're seeing them draw back from a lot of the abuses that went on. From my point of view, they really have done everything they should do as far as abuses are concerned in the pharmaceutical industry and detailing doctors, with this one exception. This is the only exception left that I have concerns about. The rest of what they do with us is excellent. They present information to us. They're honest about the side effects and potential problems of the drugs. And I actually depend on these people to give me an honest appraisal of a new medication when it comes out, and they do a great job of doing it. But this is not the proper setting for it, and I'd like to see this practice ended. And I'll stop my my discussion of it there. We believe we have the language correct now. We're going just after lunches, but nothing else that they do.
Okay. Questions? Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bates, I guess one of my big problems here is we've seen a lot of activity this session to create an empire in the Department of Justice and giving the Attorney General some extraordinary powers. And I see this as just another step along that pathway. Have you considered housing this someplace else other than with the AG?
I had not considered it, but would accept and would look forward to a friendly amendment to change it if you feel uncomfortable with it. We wanted to have some minimal teeth in this. Someone at one point suggested a ridiculous fine of, I think it was $10,000 or something. It's crazy. We just want a gentle way of saying, please stop this practice, and if one stops it, they'll all stop it. You just can't have one pulling out and feeling they're losing a competitive edge with another company.
Follow up?
Yes.
Quite honestly, Mr. Chair, it's when we give somebody with this sort of authority the ability to self-fund, there is inherent dangers in doing that, and that's what this does. It self-funds it. It self-funds the way the money flows. So
I would have no problem with that being placed in a separate account putting it to education in other areas, nursing, physicians, whatever.
Nursing
would be fine. Yes, ma'am.
You're out of order.
Like, we know what nursing program we want to put it in, don't we? I'd hope there'd never be a penny collected. I would hope that the practice would simply end the state of Oregon, and the representatives could spend their time really getting the job done they need to get done. Or redirect those funds to evening meetings where we have a chance to really have an opportunity to interface with physicians and other nurse practitioners who are prescribers and get a good education on the new drugs coming out. This is an inappropriate way to do it. As simple as that.
You mean a banquet evening meeting?
They're usually not banquets. Usually you're too tired to have a banquet, but you sit down, you listen, you have a good conversation. They usually bring in what we call the pros from Dover. They'll bring in somebody who's another physician, who's an expert in the field, and have a long discussion about any new product. It's really an excellent way to get an education. It's straightforward. It's above board. You know who's sponsoring the event, and it's usually very educational.
Okay. Senator Montes Anderson.
So it takes away the promotional products like pens and notepads and that type of thing.
Those have already been ended. They were ended in January. And frankly, I thought it was I thought it was an overreaction. I don't think any physician ever changed how he prescribed because he happened to have a pen that had a logo on it.
I know, because we give them away to our patients.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Monsanto, I often think about this in the same vein that I think of Senate Bill 10. Okay, we don't talk about campaign finance reform. We talk about all the little stuff that goes on around the edges of it. This is more along the line of campaign finance reform and too much being done on the edges of the pharmaceutical industry that really don't need to be done. The pharmaceutical reps do a great job. They've been really hammered for not doing a good job. In fact, they do a good job. They're very educational. These are smart people who are well educated in their drugs. They give us good information on it. This is the wrong venue for them to do. We're trying to stop this practice.
And Mr. Chair, I want to cite an example. Now, this was in the 90s, and they may not be doing that now with the counties, but it was educational, I felt. But we did have to change our whole schedules because there were about 15 to 20 of us nurses working for Clackamas County. And then the rep would call us and say they would be there. So we would change our schedules so we wouldn't be seeing patients so that we could be educated at a lunch. And let me tell you, the education was good. It, as you know, nurses aren't required to have continuing ed. And in a sense, this brought us up to date with that. But it was a meal. It was a meal. And I guess we could have this same presentation, but without a meal, basically.
Mr. Chair and Senator Mons Anderson, I agree. I've actually had reps come in during a lunchtime when my staff had brought their own lunch and had a long discussion as an example about immunization programs, which can be very complex, as you know, and have a great discussion. And those things can still occur. I'm talking about lunches that are expensive, drive up the cost of pharmaceuticals, and really don't have any educational value of any significance.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Senator Telfer.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, you know, at the doctors in Meyer, I think they get pizza for their meals. So definitely difference. I'm wondering if we've had or if you've had a legal opinion as to the constitutionality regarding free speech. Does this bump up against that at all?
My understanding is it doesn't, but I could be wrong. I'm not a lawyer myself. When we get a bill drafted by LC, they usually understand that what we're doing and what the ramifications of it are. And if there's a free speech or other issue, they're usually pretty quick to tell us.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bates, you're familiar with the...
I am. I haven't read through it all together, but I...
Okay. I think it's an amazingly comprehensive body of work, and I think the pharmaceutical industry is doing a remarkable job of self-policing at this point.
I agree.
And understanding that this became effective January of this year, and just if I may, Mr. Chair, just to read this one component in connection with this is talking about in office presentations, and it specifically says that the presentations provide scientific or educational value, and the meals are modest as judged by local standards and not part of an entertainment or recreational event. So that gets, one would assume, away from the gourmet meal more towards the pizza. And because this has been in effect such a short period of time, some of the events in the past we would assume may not be happening anymore. And I guess my question is, because pharma is trying to do a very good job of policing themselves, if we're better off allowing the industry to make the move rather than doing it statutorily.
I'm still concerned that's not going to happen. It certainly hasn't happened in my office. I don't consider the Olive Garden or the Outback or the other major retailers to be restaurateurs to be part of that. I wouldn't go as far as we have with Senate Bill 10, but I just think this needs to end.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Okay, John Eiselman, Tom Holt, and Jim Gardner, would you come up, please? Jack Eiselman, would you go ahead and get started, please?
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, Jack Eiselman, I'm a partner with Tonkin Torp, and I appear before you today on behalf of the Oregon Bioscience Association. I've distributed some materials about a recent economic impact statement that the Oregon Bioscience Association performed earlier this year. I'll let the one-pager speak for itself, but briefly, that study revealed that our industry contributes almost $3.5 billion in economic activity to the state, including $800 million in personal income and over 13,000 jobs in Oregon. We're here today to express concerns about Senate Bill 845 and the unintended consequences it could have on our industry. Our industry is one of the few in the state now, I'm pleased to report, that in many sectors is experiencing some growth. There are medical device providers and other life sciences companies that, due to the nature of the products they produce, while not recession-proof, are certainly recession-resistant. We feel that the concerns raised by Senate Bill 845 are more appropriately addressed through industry self-regulation. I know this committee has heard about the industry self-regulation that occurs. We're also concerned that the bill, as introduced, may not sufficiently carve out bona fide research activities from the exceptions, and raise that as another concern of ours. So with that, I will conclude my testimony and be available for questions.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt, appearing today on behalf of ASI, which is a mid-sized biotech company. We're here in opposition both to the underlying bill and to the amendment proposed by Senator Bates. ASI deals in product areas that are highly specialized in many cases. You know, for example, the company has four products that are orphan drugs, meaning that they have a total global market of fewer than 200,000 patients. So the company is dealing with a lot of specialists who actually want to see our reps and we'll often call them in, and they may want to do that at their convenience, you know, over a lunch. These products do tend to be expensive, and that tends to lead to fairly common billing issues, and so the reps will work with the staffs on proper coding and things like that. And it is not always convenient for physicians or their staffs to go to the sort of evening program that Dr. Bates described, though those do provide high value, their clinical presentations. And not everyone can do that. It is often much more efficient for an office to pull a few people together over a couple of sandwiches. And I would point out that the standards that ASI has signed on to through pharma and the standards that the company enforces itself internally do indeed require very modest meals. A large gourmet meal would not be allowed under company policy. It would typically be a tray of sandwiches or something like that that can be done over a lunch. They want to do that because you don't want the meal to be the event. You want the conversation to be structured around a clinical discussion or other issues that maybe involve a patient care. So we see this bill and the proposed amendment as something that simply would interfere with very important communications about the products with physicians and their staffs, and therefore would fundamentally interfere with patient care. I think there are much bigger issues that we ought to be addressing. We would be supportive of another bill that's in this committee that would simply reiterate that we would follow the industry standards, and I believe those are outlined in Senate Bill 649. I'd be happy to take questions.
Questions?
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Gardner for Pharma. I'm not going to belabor this issue. I've been here before on this underlying bill. I did want to speak briefly to the amendment. There's an adage that that comes to mind, not to sound like a libertarian today, but that government governs best that governs least. And if physicians are concerned about lunches inappropriately influencing prescriber behavior, there's a very simple antidote to that, and that is to place a sign on the reception desk that says "No free lunch." It's actually a course of action that that some clinics and some institutions have followed, and it's certainly one that is open to any prescriber, any physician's office. The other irony of this bill is this is what I call the "It's Just Lunch" bill. As Dr. Bates pointedly testified, it continues to permit dinners, which I find a curious distinction. As Tom testified, we would commend to your attention Senate Bill 649, which is the attestation bill that that would essentially require any manufacturer doing business in the state of Oregon to attest that they are abiding by the pharma code and are adhering to the requirement for only modest lunches, sandwiches, and the like, and eschewing lavish entertainment.
Do you consider the two bills that you mentioned to be mutually exclusive?
Mr. Chair, I think they are mutually exclusive in as much as the 649 would permit modest sandwiches in the workplace during an educational session.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I just point out, as I said earlier, that this new code is less than 6 months old. I think the industry needs to have a chance to adjust to the new standards they've set. And I've always been one, Mr. Chair, that thinks that if folks are moving in the right direction on their own, we shouldn't get in their way.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Further questions? Seeing no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing and come back to this bill on Monday. Senate Bill 702, we're not going to hear today. We will hear that on Monday. We do have amendments, but I don't know if we can pass the amendments today, so we will carry this over. Senate Bill 876. We're in a work session. We have a work session scheduled for that. Do we have something on 876?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 876, there's some dash one amendments. We've previously heard this bill on April 6th and 8th. We have not received the revenue or fiscal yet on the amendments.
We haven't talked about the dash ones.
No, we haven't. We can.
I will open a work session on 876 to take a look at the dash one amendments.
Do you want to talk about it, or do you want me to talk about it?
That's your preference.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 1 amendment reflects the need to have DHS keep a close eye on immunosuppressant drugs, as I testified earlier on this bill. This is a very precise drug. Years ago, the mental health drugs were discovered that many of them, they had a narrow therapeutic index, and so that the generics that were being approved actually were not necessarily working because they needed more specificity. Sorry about this cold, but it's... So I think what the amendment is doing is trying to set these anti-resistant drugs for organ transplants, which are very, very expensive procedures requiring very, very precise drugs in order to maintain the health of the patient and keep the new organ in that patient from being rejected. So we know we have a process, the DUR and the the Food and Drug Administration, as far as looking at these drugs, but we've also learned that past experience with mental health drugs, which I believe the Senate has also in years past set aside to be able to be used to prescribe brands versus generics. So I'm just very cautious on the narrow therapeutic index of these drugs being overlooked. And so this amendment is designed to have a directive to DHS to really kind of keep a close eye on it.
Okay.
The process.
Jim Edge, would you come up, please? And Richard Kosasen, would you also come up?
Good morning, Chair Morissette, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Edge, Assistant DHS Director with the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. I can't comment too much on these Dash 1 amendments. I just saw them for the first time about 10 minutes ago. So just looking at them now, I see in the Dash 1 amendments, line 9, 10, 11, department shall pay for a brand name without requiring an exception if the department has determined that the drug has a narrow therapeutic index. We certainly wouldn't have a problem with that if that determination has been made. In the next line, it says within 180 days after the expiration of a patent, we would make that determination. We might have a problem with that. I'm not sure 180 days is long enough to have the comparative information and the scientific information to make that kind of a determination. Normally, our process is to wait until there are generics available on the market and then make a determination based on the scientific literature about whether there is a narrow therapeutic index and whether the brand name should be protected because of that. And certainly, that will be done in the case of the drug we're talking about, Prograf. I'm just not sure about whether this 180-day requirement would put us in a bind or not. Might require us to have to do some scientific determination when all of the scientific information isn't available yet. I'll have to take it back to staff and have them look at it and have them let me know whether we're okay with this or whether this just put us into a situation that would be a problem.
Okay. Now, I don't know if we've had a chance to get a fiscal on that amendment. Mm-hmm. We haven't, so. Okay. Other questions? Yes. Senator Montes Anderson.
We called, I think it's Sandoz Wholesale that sells drugs or provides drugs for all the pharmacies, and there's a generic, immunosuppressant generic. It's called Tacrolimus, T-A-C-R-O-L-I-M-U-S. It's a generic for transplants. It has not yet been approved, but they are already listing it. So I still feel that there will be a generic coming out that would be in competition with Prograf. And would this bill then tie the hands of the state by not allowing the generic, which evidently is maybe coming on the market soon, compared to Prograf?
Mr. Chair, Senator Moniz Anderson, I'm not aware of the status of that drug, but I do know that our process would be when generics are available to make a scientific determination of whether there is a narrow therapeutic index and a brand name drug should be protected by not encouraging the use of that generic. I'm not aware that there's a generic available on the market.
It's not
that,
yet approved.
That drug maybe
Sandoz
is not
is listing
yet,
it, but it
not
is.
Yet available, but
not available yet.
They may be in the process of preparing it. I know that both at the federal level and at the state level, federally at the Food and Drug Administration and at the state level, our Drug Utilization Review Board, we always look at this situation when a drug comes off of patent and generics become available. If the generics are equivalent, we like to be able to promote the use of the generics because they're generally much lower cost. If they're not equivalent, and if there is this narrow therapeutic index problem, we would not do that, and we would make that determination. We'll do that with Prograf, and in that sense, I don't think we even need a bill. We will do that with Prograf, and if there is a narrow therapeutic index problem, we will not encourage the use of the generics and reduce the reimbursement price. But it's this 180 days after patent that has me a little bit concerned that it may not be adequate time to make that kind of a determination when generics aren't available and there isn't enough scientific information yet available. But again, as I said, I'll have staff look at it.
Okay. Richard Kosasin, do you have anything to say about this?
Mr. Chair, Richard Kosasin, Astellas Pharmaceuticals, and I think raised three issues to the previous question raised by Senator Moniz Anderson. I would suggest that no, there is no requirement, absolute requirement for the use of the brand. It still allows the prescriber the authority to prescribe the brand or the generic. I think this is an attempt really to get at the question that Senator Telfer raised, and that is to raise the awareness and point at and take a very direct look at immunosuppressants with respect to organ transplants. In terms of a comparison with drugs, a determination for a drug in terms of identifying that particular drug as a narrow therapeutic index drug could be made by itself solely in the absence of a generic on the market. The review of that particular drug and the determination of that particular drug with respect to a designation as an NTI drug can be done on that particular drug, absent of any other drug. You're not comparing drug A with drug B to make the determination. You are making a determination based upon an analysis and a review of drug A. So that comparison I don't think is valid. With that, Mr. Chair, again, I think the concentration of the bill is a direct focus on immunosuppressants and organ transplants. And that's the intent.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to close the work session, and we'll come back to this issue. And Mr. Edge, Jim, you will be here on Monday of next week. We'll wait until Monday to hear your concerns. Good. Thank you. I want to open a work session on 8:58.
Here's the
Granville for 858.
All of these pens are out of ink.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 858 was originally heard on April 6th. It directs the Department of Human Services to develop and implement a community outreach and media campaign regarding the problem of underage alcohol use. Beginning July 1, 2009, it would appropriate $6.3 million general fund dollars to DHS for implementation of the community outreach campaign and $1 million to DHS for implementation of the media campaign. Provisions for the development and implementation of the community outreach and media campaigns by the Department of Human Services would be repealed on January 2nd, 2016. There have been Dash 1 amendments submitted, which I can talk about, or Senator Monis Anderson, they were her amendments. We have received a no revenue impact statement, and a fiscal statement was issued on the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay. Yes, it was. Senator, would you like to speak to the amendments?
Yeah, we were trying to bring the fiscal down.
quite that way.
No, it did not. I'm really passionate about this issue because I see the problem that alcoholism and underage drinking, I mean, it is an epidemic in Oregon, and really wanted to have some bill that came out of our task force that we had during the interim, and we felt this would be the best one to come out. You know, I have problems with this because of the fiscal. I mean, it's huge. And, of course, I have problems with a lot of these bills because they all have fiscals, and I really don't really want to pass any of them out just because we're in tough economic times. But we had said this bill would go to Ways and Means with the caveat if funds are available. If funds are available, and we don't know if there's an opportunity to use federal stimulus monies, CDC, I mean, we don't know if there would ever be a chance to take advantage of funds that are available. So this is, I did not want this bill to be general fund money, but, and if you read the fiscal, it really explains that it wouldn't necessarily be general fund monies, but I think maybe the department could speak to that better than I could. But $7.3 million is a lot of money. But I'd take a look at the amount of money we spent on tobacco prevention, and we were spending a lot more than that for tobacco prevention, and it really made a big difference in decreasing the use of tobacco with adolescents. So that's really all I have to say about the amendment. It's sort of up to you what you really want to do with it. I definitely would not... I definitely would not want to have general fund go to this. It would definitely have to depend on other revenues that we might be able to take advantage of.
Well, I don't know if this is the year to pass a beer tax or not. An alcohol recovery fee is what we call it, a.k.a. beer tax, alcohol recovery fee. That's a bill that is in the House. Whether or not we have the votes to pass that, I think a lot will depend on what happens toward the end of the session when we get the revenue forecast and realize that we're cutting back on very essential programs, and something may happen. And in that case, if this bill is in Ways and Means, there may be some funding for this along with other programs. We have some advocates here. Would you like to come up and say a few words? Either Gina? Yeah, why don't you? Very briefly, we'll either send it out today, or I think we would be my preference to send it to Ways and Means. But we can either do it today or Monday. Go ahead. Introduce yourself, please.
Hello, my name is Dr. Gina Nickel. I am the Executive Director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs, and I can identify with Senator Telfer right now. I'm getting over a cold. I'd just like to put on the record that I do think if you do pass this bill out to Ways and Means that there might be some opportunities to fund it, not out of the general fund, later on. So I would ask that you do pass this to Ways and Means in the hopes that we can find funding either out of the beer tax or someplace else that's not state general fund. I agree with you in these hard economic times. It's hard to put this through for general fund, but I do have to tell you the statistics are not good, and our 8th graders and especially our 11th graders are drinking more now than ever, and that is really a gateway drug for more problems later on. It's going to be more expensive later on. So we really do thank Senator Mona Sanderson for bringing this issue forward, and I would ask this committee to pass this bill out today.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Stephanie Suarez-Pump. I'm chair of the Governor's Council on the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. We do have an epidemic of underage drinking, and I, too, would like to thank Senator Mona Sanderson for her leadership. The statewide leadership team for alcohol-free kids spent months looking into this issue and worked with the Attorney General's Underage Drinking Task Force. You know, our 8th graders are drinking at almost 82% higher than the national average. We essentially dismantled prevention in the early 2000s with the cuts then, and very little infrastructure has been rebuilt. And I believe that we're paying the price for that today. Almost 50% of 11th graders are drinking. You know, kids are drinking by 8th grade. That means they're starting when they're 10, 11, 12 years old. And some of the hearings that we've had, we hear from people who are in recovery, and they've started as young as 8, and it's almost always alcohol. The cost of not taking action, I believe, is far greater. And I, at least if we pass this bill out of committee and send it to Ways and Means, we open the door to future possibilities for funding this initiative.
Okay. Other comments, questions? Thank you very much. Okay, we're in work session.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I don't know if we have enough votes for this.
Yes.
I would prefer, Ms. Chair, if we could wait till Monday. I think we need, at some point in time, between your committee, Mr. Chair, and your committee, Madam Chair, we have sent a fair number of bills to Ways and Means. And I think, at least in conversation with Senator Bates this morning, he is looking forward to us prioritizing what we have sent as to what is vital. What I mean, you know, some of the 400 series is kind of critical for some things, so I'm not against this per se, but I would like to have maybe a little more time for us to prioritize so we can send this down appropriately, for example, with or without recommendations, that sort of thing. So I think we could still move it Monday, but I just take a little more time for us to have conversation.
Comment? No. Okay.
Yeah, I would just as soon move it today without recommendation.
Okay. I can live with that. We're in work session?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to 858.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 858. Comments?
We keep piling on. So.
I know we do.
Hearing no comments, concerns, so ordered.
Ms. Chair, I move Senate Bill 858 as amended to the floor, and that the bill be subsequently referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 858 to the floor, and with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with no recommendation. Okay. Comments? Yes. Senator Telfer.
You know, I like the bill, and I like its intent and the solutions that it holds. But $7.3 million out of our hands and just say, okay, Ways and Means, it's up to you to try to figure this out, and not knowing how they might figure that out. The impact that they may decide on prioritizing this over something else may be something that I can't go along with. So, you know, I'm going to be a no vote, although I support the intent of the bill. It's the fiscal that goes with it in these times, these economic times, that I'm afraid to send it off to Ways and Means and just wash my hands of it.
Okay. Again, I'll say that we've worked on an alcohol recovery fee for the last five sessions, and I think that there might be money available through that which could help fund this program. And so my feeling is that this bill would be considered for funding outside of the general fund. Otherwise, it would have to compete with a lot of other worthy projects, and I think that partially would address your concerns. So I favor sending it because this is a very important issue, and if funds are available, and that's what your intent was, it with funds available, so there's a wide discretion, and we will do some prioritization of bills that we've sent there, but my feeling is, or my priority would be if there are funds available. So I don't see a conflict with us sending it to Ways and Means. I think it's a fairly narrow request for particular funding. So, other comments? Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Monaghan.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Excused.
Senator Telfer.
No.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the bill passes and will go to Ways and Means for consideration. So, okay. Senate Bill 550. We're in work session. Where are we?
Mr. Chair, we don't have the dash to amendments yet from LC, okay. So there's really not anything
okay.
we can do with this
51.
Today. 551. 551. Do we want to carry? Carry over 550 for the record.
Well, okay. For the record, we'll carry 550 over till Monday. 51. 551.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 551, we've previously heard on March 16th that requires the Department of Human Services to provide through area agencies emergency services to senior citizens and persons with disability who lose home and community-based services due to reductions in funding. It requires the department to study impact on the individuals of the reductions in funding and report to the interim committee of the Legislative Assembly. It would sunset January 2nd, 2012. There is a dash 2 amendment which adds a provision which specifies that those entities that the Department of Human Services must implement a plan for providing emergency services to senior citizens and persons with disabilities who receive services beginning July 1st, 2007 and lose services during the biennium beginning July 1st, 2009. It modifies the provision that requires the department to maintain records on specific entities in order to contract with a private entity or individual to conduct a study on the impact of determination or reduction in the services on those noted individuals. It appropriates an unspecified amount from the general fund to the Department of Human Services beginning July 1st, 2009 for carrying out the provisions of this measure. And it adds a provision declaring an emergency which would make the measure to take effect upon passage. We have received a no revenue impact statement. We have not received a fiscal impact statement as of yet on the dash 2.
It would be hard to get a fiscal impact statement with a blank in the bill, I would think.
Yeah.
We do have James Davis here. James, are you prepared to address this? We're not going to do anything today. We could do it later if you wish, but... this is a bill that I think Senator Verger had interest in. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, James Tays from the Department of Human Services, and Jeanette Burkett, who heads up our Senior and Disability Office. The reason the fiscal is indeterminate is because, I mean, at this point we have no idea of the number of people, first, that might lose services. We went through all the reduction scenarios in the Ways and Means Committee yesterday, and it ranges from anywhere from 4 to 14,000 people, depending at what level the reductions could go to. So even beginning to conceptualize the loss of services and what an emergency backup might be. Jeanette worked on some notions about how you might staff that, but again, in terms of an actual fiscal at this point, I think it would remain indeterminate at this point at least.
Mm-hmm. Could you extrapolate from that large number how many people we may be forced to pay for in nursing home settings?
Mr. Chairman, the deepest reductions in the senior disability program would be a change in income eligibility, in which case they're not eligible for nursing homes either. I mean, literally, it would be excluding whole groups of people entirely from services and from any Medicaid eligibility. So it would not necessarily translate into increased. I'm sure there'd be more ER visits and people ending up in hospitals with no place to be discharged to and things of that sort. But the biggest cuts, because our reductions basically are either provider rates or loss of eligibility, and then all the other administrative reductions. But the loss of eligibility is income-based on several different scenarios that we were asked to price out, and that would result in total loss of eligibility for everything.
Okay. Questions? Okay. Thank you. Nicole, would you like to say anything?
Senator Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Armstrong. I'm here on behalf of O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And I'll be very brief. We did talk about this before, and as James had stated, this is the bill we hope we never have to use this session. This is the bill we don't want to have to see it come into play. But we understand from 0103 that when you do make reductions in services and everybody hopes that people will find their way to something else, you have to help them find their way. And I was talking to the co-chairs of Human Services Ways and Means earlier in the session, and you know, we had this discussion, if you cut 50 here, it might cost you 20 over here to save them, just to keep them afloat. And that's the idea of this, to try to at least put something in place that allows a conversation to be had about how you do this. How do people leave the system in a way that if they're in a home or community-based care setting and they have to leave that setting, what do they do? People who are in nursing facilities often don't have a home to go back to. And there's a lot of thought that has to go into that. It's not just as easy as saying, okay, we've made this cut and now you're done. And that's the goal of this. And certainly, as James said, it is hard to put. We've put a lot of thought around how would you help people do that? What are the bare minimums you could do? But it's all dependent upon what kinds of things come out of the whole Ways and Means budgeting process.
Okay. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will close the work session on 551.
I'm sorry. You need to note that.
Pardon me?
You need to note for the record you're going to carry it over till Monday. Mm-hmm. All of this
that
is trying
to. Yeah. We will carry that over till Monday. I'll work on open a public hearing on 7:16.
Work session.
And we did have testimony. We had some testimony in favor, but also some testimony in opposition. Yeah, a summary.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 716 was originally heard on April 15th. The original bill directed the Department of Human Services to adopt rules requiring immunization against meningococcal disease as a condition of attendance at school. If you'll recall, the whole measure was replaced with the -1 amendments. The amendment stipulated that the Department of Human Services, in consultation with the Superintendent of Public Instruction, shall prepare information about meningococcal disease for schools and post-secondary educational institutions to distribute. The information shall be made available at no cost and no later than June 1st of each year. It provides specifics on what the information must include, and the amendment mandates that the school must provide the parents of a child attending the school with the information at the beginning of every school year, starting when the child enters grade 6. Post-secondary educational institutions that offer on-campus housing shall provide the information to each entering student who will be residing in the on-campus housing.
Now we don't have
We did receive a no revenue impact statement, and a fiscal statement was issued on the Dash 1 amendment.
The fiscal Dash 1. Yes.
Well, we heard from the Department of Education and independent colleges, and they had a concern with the mandate. This says there's minimal fiscal at the DHS level. Is this an unfunded mandate that we're just passing on a cost to the areas of education, which are also under immense financial pressure today?
Other questions? Okay, I'm going to carry this over, and I'm going to close the public hearing, and I want to take a closer look at this before we make a decision. Monday is the last day, and we will have a number of bills for work sessions, and we will be moving things expeditiously.
Or not.
Okay, well, we may skip over things.
Do you just for the record, we need to carry that over.
Okay, yeah, 598, which is the requires drug manufacturers to establish a pharmaceutical take back. We do have some amendments, and that will be considered on Monday as well. Okay, I'm going to open a work session, which I will close almost immediately on 6:49, just to say that this is, it is a mutually exclusive bill to one that we heard earlier, and I don't want to hear this, I don't want to pass this bill out at the present time. Monday will be the final opportunity to make a decision on which bill, if any, we pass out concerning ethics and pharmaceutical industry and no free lunches, but you can come back for dinner if you'd like. We'll. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 649, or the work session. Sorry about that. Okay. Okay, 646. Okay, Senate Bill 646. I will open a work session on Senate. Okay, here we are, public hearing and work session.
Sorry, we're confusing you.
Okay, Nicole, would you come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 646 has not had a previous hearing. It requires the Department of Human Services to determine and submit to Oregon Department of Administrative Service budget level for Type B area agencies calculated at 95% of cost to the Department of Human Services if clients were served by the department. It requires Oregon Department of Administrative Services to include budget level in the governor's budget request to the Legislative Assembly. We do have Dash 2 amendments.
amendments. Those amendments modify the provision requiring DHS adopt by rule a methodology for determining the biennial budget levels for Type B area agencies for planning and administering programs for elderly persons and persons with disabilities, which include both the direct and indirect cost. It requires the department submit a budget request to Department of Administrative Services based on budget levels determined by that methodology. We have received a no revenue impact statement. We are waiting on the fiscal statement to be issued.
Nicole.
Senator Morris, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Nicole Armstrong, here on behalf of O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. We represent the area agencies, including the Type B. This is a fairly simple bill. What we are asking is that the 95% of equity, which is the reimbursement rate that is supposed to be calculated on behalf of the Type B area agencies for the services we provide doing the work of the Medicaid system for the state, be included in the base budget that comes out of the Department of Human Services. This bill does not require it to be funded. However, it does allow for that type, about 95% of equity, to be a basic part of the budget that comes out of the Department of Human Services, and recognizes that that is the amount that has been agreed to and is in statute to compensate the Type B agencies who are doing that work of the state. Currently, we are funded at 90% of equity, so we are 10% behind the state, yet still doing all of the work of the state at the same time, which does create quite a challenge, particularly when we are dealing with the same kinds of reductions of the state when we're already behind. So this is just something to allow us to be a part of the budget from the Department of Human Services here on out, and then from there, the Department of Administrative Services and the governor will be able to make their own choice what they choose to do with that.
James Taves, would you come up, please? While Mr. Taves is approaching the bench, I don't have to put you under oath to get a straight answer from you, I'm sure. No, I will say that I think Mr. Taves has been very empathetic toward this issue, and I think he tried to do this the right thing during the last session in February, and beyond his control, money was moved out to a different area. So could you comment on this particular, on the bill, please?
Mr. Chairman, James Tace from the Department of Human Services Senior People with Disabilities Division. We actually agree with this bill and do not believe it has a fiscal impact, because it simply memorializes what we already do or think we already do. We already have a formula that we've negotiated, and it's been agreed to by all sides. It is incorporated into administrative rules, so we do take the Type B area agencies and we compute their costs, and we come up with a 95% level as a budget request. We've submitted that in our last, I think, two budget cycles, and as you correctly noted, last session we actually, in the governor's recommended budget, had the budget set at 95% of equity, and then eventually the co-chair's budget reduced that back to 90%. So it is our intent in every budget cycle to present the 95% level. I think this language is stronger than current statutory language, which says we will consider that. This says we'll actually submit it. So we've done that. We will continue to do that. As Nicole said, it'll be part of the agency's budget request. That doesn't necessarily end up getting approved by DAS as part of the base budget. And actually, there isn't really anything about base budget in the statute. I mean, the continuing service level or the base budget or the essential budget level is what everyone agrees is how to roll up the previous biennium, roll it out for 24 months in the next biennium. And we have lots of discussions about what's in that and what isn't. I think the important fact is we have the formula, we have the rule, we'll peg the dollar amount, we'll submit it as part of our budget, and then whether or not it ultimately ends up in the governor's recommended budget, of course, is part of a bigger discussion. So we agree.
Okay. Could you, Nicole, refresh our memory as to the duties that are performed, the services that are provided? What exactly does this bill?
Chair Morris, The Type B area agencies have taken on the role as the Medicaid service provider, basically, for the state. So instead of the Department of Human Services providing the long-term care Medicaid system as far as case management, financial eligibility, those kinds of services in the counties that are represented by the Type Bs, the area agencies do that. So we do exactly the same thing. If you change the signs on the door, it would be exactly the same kinds of services because those are services that are mandated to be provided at certain levels. We do exactly the same thing that the state does. There's really, I don't think, any difference.
Okay. In the past, when it was 90% or maybe even less than that, there were some concerns, and I know I had some concerns from Lane County Council of Governments, and I think rather than additional funding, I think some computer or some hardware was provided to that particular office that maybe wouldn't have been provided. I had talked about introducing a bill that would require 100% equity rather than, with the hopes that we would get 95, but to memorialize, as Mr. Tave said, this to require that it be included in the budget that is then submitted to the governor, I think would be a step, a little bit stronger language than to consider. And I know when times are tough that it may not happen. But the counties could always give that service back, and that's something that is true with other services that are passed on to the counties that they take, agree to take, including corrections. And in Lane County, the Lane Regional Air Pollution Authority, which does not receive 100% of equity from DEQ. Mm-hmm. And there's some talk of the cities and the counties giving that up to DEQ, which I think would be a mistake because it would not, the service wouldn't be there. So I think local service providers do a really good job, and I would like to see, I think this is a good bill, so thank you very much, and we'll talk about it. Yes.
I think you hit on it. Thank you. So right now you request 95, you're always given 90, you're doing this by administrative rule. You're looking for some more leverage, some hammer here that says statutorily it's supposed to be 95. So really this is a way for this to, by statute, be 95% versus the governor's budget or the legislative's budget.
Chair Morissette, Senator Telfer, sorta. What we're trying to do, we obviously can't require what is funded, but you're right, we're attempting to strengthen the language so that the efforts of Mr. Tays and his department to recognize the 95% amount that we've agreed to do the work of the state for has a little more momentum coming out of the Department of Human Services and their budgets as they go forward from the state. They've been presented as policy option packages in this current budget, and obviously all of those were shot down, even though it's something that is in statute as the required rate because we're willing to do it at a 5% savings for the state.
Okay. Other questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I always have problems, especially when we're in tough economic times, because I don't have the whole picture. What would this mean if we really had to go with 95%? What else then aren't we able to fund? I would like every department to come forward with coming. I mean, every department could come and say we've got to be funded at least 95% of whatever they want. So it's tough for me, and I don't want to make it tougher actually for Ways and Means either.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
yes.
I don't think this makes the decision any tougher. All this does basically is memorialize in statute a stronger language of basically what the department is presenting now in their option packages. So, this does not necessarily, this has no impact on because we're requiring them to present this, does not necessarily make the decision that's made and the governor's recommended any different than it probably would be anyway.
And Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to Senator Mona Sanderson's concern, the 95% is 95% of what the state operation otherwise would cost. In response to the budget going up or down in terms of service levels and things of that sort, if we cut the budget dramatically, then the book of business that a state office would do in terms of the number of clients and the ratios of case managers and protective service workers and all that would go down. And likewise, if the AAAs were at 95%, then it would just be 95% of a lower level. So it's not 95% of what they want. It's 95% of what's actually there after the budget is done. So I don't think that would in and of itself tie our hands. We discussed at length in Ways and Means yesterday the impact if we cut staff on the state side and how that ripples out into the area agencies as well. So the hydraulics go up and down on both sides.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
But given that, and right now, if you're being funded at 90%, that means somebody else, somewhere, something else is getting that other 5%. And so what this is doing is saying that other 5% that's going somewhere else is now going to be, by statute, going to this.
No.
So why have the bill?
Well, the problem is when we talk about when times are good. When times are good, when times were good, they were getting 90%.
90% of what?
Of what the going rate was when times were good. But the frustration of the local providers is that they have to do exactly the same amount of work that the state would do at a lower rate. Now, that's a... When I was Mayor Springfield and on LCOG, when we took on part of this, I said, what's going to happen if they don't pay that? And I recommend giving it back. Give it back to them. I know that Mr. Taves was very supportive last time, and in February he thought that he had the money available to put it into this program to raise the equity, and that money disappeared. Now, if there was a stronger, the Ways and Means chairs have the ultimate control, but if it's a little bit stronger recommendation that it be 95% statutory language, that's the amount that the department must ask for and not 90% or 85, that is added incentive for Ways and Means and others to pay attention to it. So it isn't 95. It's 95% of the funds available at the time. So it's just a better base for the request for the by the department.
Chair Morris, that's exactly what we're going for. And Senator Telfer, this issue has been around for a while, several biennium that we've been going back and forth on it. And certainly Senator Mona Sanderson's county and Senator Cruz's county are two of the counties that are affected by it. And I would say, it's always difficult for us to say if we're funded at 90%, then which 10% of the people that come to our door do we tell not that we don't have enough funds for? So this just helps us with the argument as we go forward and working with the budgets. But this does not at all require funding to actually happen. It just sort of moves us along in that discussion a little bit to make our case that it is here in statute and has been for quite a while.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, we are in work session.
We don't have physical.
Hold on.
We do have some abilities now. The fiscal on this would be zero.
Mr. Chairman, correct? Senator Cruz, again, as Nicole stated, and as we read the bill, it requires us to present by formula a dollar amount, but there's no requirement that it actually be funded. So in that sense, there's not a fiscal that...
Right, and it requires no extra work of you because you're doing this work anyway.
Correct.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we do a rule suspension and move this
We're in work session. Close public hearing, open a work session. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, first of all, we can. Do we want the fours?
Yes?
No.
Oh.
Dash twos.
It is twos. Oh, I'm dash looking at the wrong dumbbell. We want the twos, right?
Right.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendment to 646. Is that for that bill?
Yeah, yes.
It is. It's been a long week and it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Where are we here? Do we have the dash what?
It's the dash twos.
The dash twos of 646. Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash twos.
We have to suspend the rules first.
No, not to do the amendment.
Not to do the amendment.
Oh, do the amendment. We're doing the amendment. I'm sorry.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash twos to Senate Bill 646.
Mr. Chair, you should ask if there are objections before you bang the gavel.
Well, are there... Now, wait a minute. We're doing the... Okay, are there objections to the amendments, dash twos? I see no objections.
Hold on. Okay.
I don't know if I have an objection or not. This is the first I've seen them, so... I am not able to vote on this.
Okay. Okay, I'll go ahead and close the public here, the work session, and we'll come back to this. Okay.
Monday's going to get busier and busier.
We're going to carry it over. We're going to carry it over.
Okay.
Okay, and we'll have a lot of carryover. Okay.
Mr. Chair, could you reopen the work session?
On 646? Okay, I will reopen the work session on 646.
Mr. Chair, just to be accurate in what we're doing, at this point I will withdraw my motion on the dash 2 amendment. Now you can close it again.
Senator Cruz has withdrawn his motion on the dash 2 amendment for Senate Bill 646, and I will close the public hearing. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 735. And we have a couple of amendments.
Do. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 735 was originally moved out of committee on April 15th with the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments. It's being brought back for reconsideration by the committee. We do have some additional amendments. Those being the Dash 2 amendments, which would restore the provision removed in the Dash 1 amendment that specifies that the Department of Human Services, who receives Medicaid funds and is responsible for implementing the state's medical assistant program, may not participate in the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. In conjunction with that, we have the Dash 4 amendments, which removes language from the measure which allowed the administrator of the Oregon Prescription Drug Program to establish a state-managed wholesale or retail drug distribution or dispensing system.
Okay.
No, we need motions to do this.
Yeah, we have dash twos and fours. Dash fours, and Mr. Gardner wants to make a statement.
So. Well, Mr. Chair, we need to bring this back into play first.
Right.
So, Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote by which we passed Senate Bill 735 to the floor.
Okay. Okay, Senator Cruz moves to suspend the rules to bring back the Senate Bill 735, which we passed out of committee and sent to the floor. So we are, the motion is to recall that bill.
Well, the motion is to suspend the rules.
Suspend the rules. Okay, the motion is to suspend the rules. Comment. Okay, no disagreement.
Now, Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which we sent Senate Bill 735 to the floor.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves that we reconsider the vote by which we sent Senate Bill 735 to the floor. Discussion. Disagreement. Seeing none, so...
Okay, now we're in business.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, My suggestion is that you might want to, just to achieve complete clarity with Legislative Council, get a dash six that incorporates the twos and fours all in one piece, and bring it back Monday. That's just it. And I'd be glad to work with the committee administrator to do that, if that would be.
Okay. Comments?
I don't know if there's time.
Pardon me?
I said I would be concerned about the time frame to get a
six. Well,
have the
today
is now,
Wednesday.
And then getting the fiscal and revenue on those new amendments. They would like
conflict?
7 days.
No, it's just to achieve clarity. I mean, I think you can do it the other way, but because this has a lot of moving parts, I would just, it might be better to just have it all in one piece.
But it may kill the bill.
Would it? Okay.
It may.
The time frame now, they're requesting at least 7 days. And
well, okay.
We're down to
let's
two.
Just say that. If I don't mind doing that for clarity's sake. We can move the bill on Monday with or without.
Yes.
Because I think we're. Okay. Let's talk about that recommendation for just a moment. Senator Cruz.
Okay. Well, Jim, sit back down, please. Do you have issues with the fours?
The fours, you need to restore on page 3, lines 9 through 11, and I believe that the
but that's what the twos
do.
Do
that.
The twos
I'm just concerned that they might, if they're read together, that should be okay.
Yeah,
that was, Mr. Chair, that was my read. If you do the fours and the
it
twos,
be
okay.
Right.
It would be the same as doing the sixes.
That's correct.
Okay,
and,
that should be okay.
And kind of lightening the load in LC when we don't necessarily need to do that.
Yeah.
So.
But I would like to know if the Health Policy Commission would approve of those changes. So, Janine Smith.
Janine Smith, would you come up? Tom, did you have something that you wanted to add? Tom Holt? Janine Smith.
Yeah. Chair Morissette, members of the committee, Senator Mona Sanderson, Janine, where do I work? The Office of Health Policy and Research. We do have a policy commission, but it doesn't affect this. We're fine with the twos plus the fours, which does equal six, but we have fiscals available on both twos and the fours. In both cases, it's no fiscal impact, and we're okay with the language adjustments in two and four.
Thank you. I did meet with Dr. Smith yesterday, and we went through this just to be sure that we were on the same page in terms of that. I have complete faith and confidence that Mr. Gardner was not trying to do anything that would harm the bill. I think that, you know, in terms of clarity, that might be okay, but I feel confident that what we have right now is sufficient. As long as we have the constitutional ability to pass this bill out. So I'm going to wait for Senator Cruz to...
I have a question,
yes,
though.
Yes.
Since 4 comes after 2, and 4 doesn't have the things in 2, meaning we have to add back it 2 into 4, will LC understand that? Or do they think 4 is deleting those lines on page 3?
We'll let them know that we want to.
No, we're
adapting those.
And that way... That will save LC the trouble of having to go back and I agree that they're very busy right now.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to parse out the ones and fours here because there's a lot of similarity.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Don't we want the twos and the fours?
Twos and
yes.
We do, but
the ones
are already in the bill.
Right.
So I'm wondering if the ones need to stay in or need to come out.
No, they need to stay in.
The question is, okay, if they do, because through page 3, so I guess it's page 4, the ones that are the relevant parts.
Well, perhaps it would be helpful if Jennifer kind of went through what's new in 2 and what's new in 4.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, ones need to stay in. What the dash fours do is take out provisions of the dash one. So if you don't have ones, then there's no issue of the fours with the dispensing system.
Mr. Chair, I was missing the last page of the dash fours. Now that I see it, it becomes clear. So we're okay.
So, okay. A motion.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the dash Let's do them in reverse order. I'll move the dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 735.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash 4 amendment to 735. What are we accomplishing by removing the dash 4 amendment? By adding the dash 4 amendments, what are we accomplishing?
By adding the dash 4, Mr. Chair, you're removing language from the measure which allowed the administrator of the Oregon Prescription Drug Program to establish a state-managed wholesale or retail drug distribution or dispensing system. So it's removing that language.
Okay. Discussion.
Just, Mr. Chair, there was so much commotion and talking, I was able to read the amendment, so I didn't move it.
That was my delaying tactic. I'm glad it worked.
Okay, we have a motion to add the dash 4 amendment. Discussion. Okay, seeing no discussion, no disagreement, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 735.
Senator Cruz moved dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 735. What exactly are we accomplishing by moving the dash 2 amendments?
We're going to pass the bill.
Give us the
language. We won't have a minority report.
And you remove my minority report.
Mr. Chair, the dash 2 restores the provision that was removed in the dash 1 amendment that specifies that the Department of Human Services, who receives Medicaid funds and is responsible for implementing the state's medical assistance program, may not participate in the Oregon Prescription Drug Program.
Okay. And that was removed, originally that was taken out of the bill, the prohibition to do the Medicaid was removed by the dash
ones.
Mm-hmm. And we're putting that back in.
Correct.
Now, the dash ones said that OPDP, or the administrator, may do that. The option to do it was conditional. I mean, it was not required, but we're putting it back into the prohibition of doing it. So just to be clear what we're doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Discussion, concerns, seeing none. The dash twos have been added to the bill.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 735 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Cruz moved 735 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's just this two sessions in a row I come up with great minority reports and then the bills go back to committee and, you know.
Okay. I question the word great, but
yeah. Okay. It's a matter of perspective.
A matter of perspective. Okay, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator Montana.
Aye.
Senator Berger. Excused.
Senator Delford.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator
Morrison. Aye. Senate Bill 734 passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill. Unless Senator Cruz. No, I will carry the bill.
Mr. Chair, I want to publicly thank you for your accommodation on this matter.
Thank you very much. Now, are we...
No.
No, we're not done?
We have one more, Senate Bill 287.
Okay, Senate Bill 287.
Dash 1. Then we'll be done.
Okay, 287. Would you tell us about 287?
Let's see if there's anyone for the... There's no one signed up for the public hearing, just for your information. Senate Bill 287 was originally heard back on February 2nd. It stipulates the requirements for licensure to operate multiple residential facilities in the state. The measure adds criteria for consideration when issuing new licenses for residential facilities and provides for the ability to take licensing action against other facilities that may be licensed to an individual. We do have dash 1 amendments. It modifies language in the current measure to denote specific entities to the definition of facility. It modifies language stipulating when the Department of Human Services has the right to deny, suspend, revoke, or refuse to renew a license of a provider. We've received a no revenue impact statement. We have not received fiscal impact statement information yet on the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay. So we're not going to be able to move the bill. Now, we didn't move the amendment, though.
We can move the amendment.
I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, hold on.
Whose bill is this? Mr. Chair, whose bill is this?
Mr. Chair, it was at the request of the Senate Interim Committee on Judiciary.
Yeah.
But somebody must have had the idea.
Bob, would you come up, please? Bob June Depp. Tell us where this idea
is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Jundeff from Disability Rights Oregon, and this is a bill that we have supported and worked on for the purpose of allowing DHS to better regulate group homes, particularly for folks with developmental disabilities. And what we've been trying to do is to find a place where it's covering the right programs and not covering programs that where the fit isn't there. So we've been negotiating with various parties in order to do that. I might respond to questions if you have them.
Okay. Yes, Senator Telfer.
What's the need for additional regulatory ability?
Well, the situation that we've observed in developmental disabilities community programs is that there can be a provider who operates multiple sites serving people with disabilities in the community. And one particular program can have some significant deficiencies in that program, but when the department looks at the licensure, in other words, does a licensure review and looks at particular problems of that program, they can only focus on that one program. So even if they find broad administrative problems and how that operator, the owner of multiple programs, does business, they have to do a thorough review of each and every individual program in order to review how each particular site is being governed. What we were hoping to do here is to create some efficiency so that if there's an operator of multiple homes and that operator has demonstrated some significant problems in operating one home, that DHS can ask that operator to bring all the standards up to snuff in the multiple programs that they're operating. That is the intent behind the bill. We have spoken with folks who work in this field, the Oregon Rehabilitation Association, among others, about their sense of how that would affect their business, and they have told us that they actually welcome DHS having this authority in order to provide better oversight over the work they do. Yes, you're looking at me quizzically, but that is in fact the case. There has been some concern in areas in the nursing home industry, which our original bill would have covered, that they don't welcome that degree of oversight and in fact feel that the present statutes cover that area. And there's representatives, I think, here who could speak to their concerns about that. So what we were trying to do, essentially, is to carve them out of that coverage so that we could get at our core interest, which was making sure that DHS has the regulatory authority to make sure that if there is a provider who's really demonstrated some significant problems in adhering to the rules in one facility, that DHS can ask them to make corrections across the board.
Yes.
Follow up then. So given this, if one site's bad, all sites must be bad, but the statement that the site... operators encourage this bill, wouldn't they just on their own bring the other ones up to the level of the one site that's being inspected?
Senator Morissette, Senator Talfa, that's an excellent question. And the I think the answer is, and I don't want to speak for them, but the answer is that I think that most operators in this field are good operators, and some aren't, unfortunately. And I think that the industry has an interest in making sure that the standards are upheld across the board, and they want that to be done appropriately. I think if they feel that if everyone's doing a good job, everyone benefits from that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just to cite an example, back in the 80s when I was home visiting, particularly in Multnomah County, working with the elderly in foster care homes, but there was some disability. Some of them were really not run well at all. And we would report, and we would they would clean up the one foster care home, but this one individual had about three or four foster care homes, and they just waited for DHS to be inspecting the other one to clean up that one. So, I can see where the intent of this bill, but would it cover foster care homes?
Senator Morissette, Senator Mons-Anderson, under our present draft, it would. Under our present
adult amendment. Foster homes are
yeah.
included.
I might add that my understanding of these systems is that there is a difference between, for example, the nursing home industry and the facilities that we are interested in. And that it's not, the idea isn't that if one bad is all bad, it's that we want folks to be keeping their programs up to the rules and standards. And we're in very tight financial times. It's hard to do the coverage that needs to get done. And these are programs that the state really wants to encourage to stay in business. We all want them to be in business just because there just aren't a surplus of providers out there. And so this, in our estimation, this is a way to give DHS the authority to make sure that we are keeping them in business and working up to standard.
Okay. The letter that was submitted by Mary Geer, Administrator of the Office of Licensing and Quality Care, DHS, said that, and I don't know if that includes dash fours or if it includes the bill after you remove the assisted living and nursing home. Was a $240,000 per biennium approximation of the cost of doing this. Now, was that before? Her letter was submitted February 2nd.
That's on the bill, not on the dash.
Yeah, it's on the bill, not on the dash. So we don't have the fiscal. We can't move the bill anyway, but we don't have the fiscal. But do you anticipate from, I don't see a DHS person here.
Senator Morissette, my understanding is that the dash four would significantly cut back on the fiscal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm assuming it would, and so I just the only
we have a dash one.
We don't have a dash.
No, it's a dash four. One.
Okay.
But
I mistake.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yeah. In my notes from the first, I have here adult foster care homes not included.
But they are in the dash one.
But they are, and that's the one that we're working from now, dash ones.
Okay. But we still don't have the fiscal.
Correct.
So
on the dash one. Right. Okay. You could move.
Mr. Chair, are we in work session?
Well, yeah, we have to. We are.
You were in public hearing.
Oh.
Can I open a public hearing?
Yeah. Okay, I would suggest we go into work session, we move the amendment. And
right.
Okay. Then wait for the fizz riz.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we do that, we have two other people in the audience, two other individuals that represent the rest of the industry. Did either of you have a comment to make about this, what we're doing? Okay. No comments. Okay. So we will close public hearing and open the work session.
Chairman of the Dash 1 Amendment, Senate Bill 287.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves a dash ones to Senate Bill 287 discussion. Okay, seeing no discussion or negative comments, so be it, so ordered. Senator Cruz. Oh, we're going to wait. That's all we're going to do.
We're going to carry this.
Yeah, we're going to carry this over. So, okay, Senate Bill 287 will be carried over until Monday, and unless there's other
business. Let's just make sure you get all of our bills before you gavel out. To be on the safe side.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.
So we have them.